Last week, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak said that he would leave office in September after elections take place, but protesters continued to insist on his immediate departure. Yesterday, the newly appointed Vice President Omar Suleiman met with members of the opposition, but it's unclear just who the leaders of the opposition might be, and not everybody was at that meeting. Joining me now from Cairo to look at who's vying for control is Charles Levinson, a reporter for The Wall Street Journal who's been spending much of his time recently in Tahrir Square, and I'm very pleased to welcome him to our show today. Hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What time is it now in Egypt, and are you at Tahrir Square at the moment?
It's 8:30 p.m. We're in our hotel room, which is right on, basically on the square, overlooking it, more or less.
We've been hearing reports that life in Cairo and throughout Egypt is returning to some kind of normalcy. Is the protest movement entering a new phase?
I don't know if I'd say it's entering a new phase. It seems like it's sort of settling in for a long haul standoff, perhaps. There is elements of a return to normalcy. That being said, you still have the city's sort of heart, the central downtown square, totally shut down, which is certainly paralyzing a good chunk of the city still. The stock market remains closed. The police are still nowhere to be seen. The military is in the streets. So even though you're starting to see today some shops opening, I think we're still far from normalcy here.
Are only the hardliners staying in the square?
No, I think that's not the case at all. We saw, I would say thousands again in the square today. There's a pretty, broad swath of people, turning out every day. Then they go home in the evening, and the ones that stay overnight are sort of the more, diehards, I suppose. But, during the day, there's still this sort of joyous, jubilant, carnival-like atmosphere in the square that's drawing all sorts.
Yesterday, Vice President Omar Suleiman met with opposition leaders, including two representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood, the prominent Islamist group that's been officially banned by the government. For years, they've been seen as the main opposition. Has that changed during these protests?
Well, what you hear from a lot of the opposition leaders here in Cairo, secular and Islamist alike, is that this sort of idea of the Muslim Brotherhood as the only powerful opposition group was something that was encouraged and pushed by the government itself as a sort of bogeyman to Egyptian, ordinary Egyptians who didn't want to be ruled by Islamists, and to the West as well, where it was two choices, either, an oppressive regime, an oppressive secular regime that was in power, or this Islamist Muslim Brotherhood that would, be very anti-Western, et cetera, et cetera. And there's certainly a lot of people here who will tell you and that that's not really true, that in free, fair elections with a vibrant political sphere here, the Muslim Brotherhood would certainly have their share of the pie. But this idea that they would dominate entirely and that all the Egyptians or huge percentages of Egyptians would rush to support them is just not true.
Well, most estimates are that they would get around 25% of the popular vote, but that seems a little low.
That's about what you mean. That's even, you hear anything from 15 to 25. They created the shadow parliament, which was, they couldn't vote on it, but all the opposition groups came together to try to, decide, try to agree on 100 people to be in it. And they had to sort of come to this consensus, they hashed it out over a bunch of meetings to come to this consensus on its makeup. And the Muslim Brotherhood took 15% of it, and we're happy with that. Now, perhaps
that was 100 member. That was 100
I'm sorry.
Member. That was a 100 member shadow legislation.
Basically, yes, exactly. I mean, they came together in the wake of the November parliamentary elections and said, okay, if we as the collective opposition can't have our fair share in the real parliament, we'll sort of create our own shadow body. And then they agreed on 100 people that would be on it, and they all sort of, came to a consensus on who those people would be. And, it's not a scientific method of determining, what's the real popular support of any of these groups, but it still, can be said to be a fair representation of how these groups see their, judge or value their own, street power, I guess.
The group had backed Mohamed El-Baradei as the former head of the International Atomic Energy Agency as their negotiator with the Mubarak government. Why wasn't he invited to speak with Vice President Omar Suleiman yesterday?
It's not that he wasn't invited. The opposition, that opposition alliance, refused to go, holding to their demand that they would not negotiate with the government until Mubarak was out of power. And the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, surprised everybody that morning by saying they were going, which caused some tension within the opposition, you know, within that opposition alliance.
Well, do many people agree with El-Baradei, who condemned the talks, that having Suleiman, the former head of Egyptian intelligence, in charge of the negotiations means that little has really changed?
His objection was not that Suleiman was in charge of the negotiations. The objection was that Mubarak remains in power. And their, you know, their sort of singular condition is that, you know, there'll be no negotiations until Mubarak is no longer president of Egypt, and at which point they can start discussing and negotiating over, you know, a democratic transition and everything else. So that really was the sticking point.
Well, El-Baradei is seen by many in the West as a possible opposition leader. How is he regarded by Egyptians?
The sense among many here is that he really wouldn't be a likely leader. When this is all said and done, because he doesn't really represent, it's not clear anyway that he represents his own party, has his own grassroots base. I mean, he spent so much time out of the country. He's not really seen as a indigenous part of the sort of the political game here. But that's also what sort of has made him so well suited to the role that he's currently in, which is basically to sort of oversee the, you know, sort of serve as this guiding, you know, unifying figure during this transitional period, when what the various political parties want and need to do is to sort of agree upon the rules of the game, create an arena for competition. You know, they say this isn't the time for us to compete with each other. That will come, no doubt. You know, soon enough, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood and the, you know, El Ged party can duke it out, you know, political, you know, with full on political, you know, whatever, you know, everything that goes into political campaigning. But right now, we need to agree on the rules of the game. And for that, someone that's relatively nonpartisan, like El-Baradei, and that isn't really seen as a threat to these figures, you know, could just be the best, the best person to play this, you know, to take on this role.
Well, he hasn't been involved in Egyptian national politics up until recently. Did he play any political role in Egypt before he left to work for the UN?
He was very unknown. So no, he wasn't really a political figure at all. He didn't really have any sort of public profile here until you had the run up to the Iraq War and the nuclear, you know, his role in the nuclear inspections when he sort of, you know, gained obviously a good bit of esteem here and internationally, and then ultimately winning the Peace Prize in 2005.
Are there others in the opposition who are emerging to vie for power and influence as these negotiations get underway? I was wondering about that opposition steering committee, because this whole thing has been portrayed largely as a grassroots movement, and yet we have the shadow government and a steering committee already in place.
Right. I really don't think, I mean, you have the steering committee. I mean, again, the steering committee and where that the group of opposition that came out of was somewhat disconnected from the youth movements that really drove these protests and plotted them and were behind them. So you sort of have, even though there's the youth movements and these parties that make up this sort of shadow parliament and whatnot are, you know, affiliated and in with varying degrees of, you know, directness, that they really are two separate sort of movements to some degree. Now, that being said, you know, I think it is premature to talk about, you know, which figures are emerging to sort of lead a post, a democratic Egypt, if when this is all said and done, we do begin a real transition and this regime really does change. There are a lot of names out there, a lot of party leaders, but, we really haven't seen one start to emerge, you know, beyond the others, except for El-Baradei, of course, who does have sort of this, you know, more visible profile.
Well, we've had over 30 years of martial law, or whatever we want to call it, in Egypt. Any real opposition has been squelched over those years. So would it have been possible for anybody to establish himself as a leader of the opposition?
Uh, No question. The regime has made it very difficult for any legitimate, credible opposition to emerge. The established opposition parties, the WAFT, the Tagamu, the Nasserists, have no popular following, are seen as widely co-opted by the government. And when you've had new figures emerge, like Ayman Nour in 2005, he was allowed to, run for the presidency against Mubarak in 2005. But as soon as it was over, they tossed him in jail on very sort of suspect fraud charges. So when these figures have tried to emerge on the opposition side, there's very little tolerance, and that's a challenge that they face now. At the same time, Egypt does enjoy a very vibrant sort of activist democracy activist, human rights activist scene, and there is a very vibrant civil society here. So these people are used to organizing, are used to politics, or have thought about these issues for a long time, have been taking to the streets, have been challenging the government, it's not like there's a totally dead opposition political sphere here.
Thank you so much for talking with us. Charles Levinson, a reporter for the Wall Street Journal. We were talking to him from his hotel room that overlooks Tahrir Square in Cairo.